asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. The Indian Supreme Court says the government cannot deport 40,000 Rohingya refugees settled in the country for another month. The Indian government wants to deport them on the grounds they pose a threat to national security. The move's been challenged in India's highest court by Rohingya refugees. The next date of the hearing in this case is the 7th of March, as Neha Punia reports from New Delhi.
The Indian government has told the country's highest court that it hasn't expelled any Rohingya refugees so far and that it is aware of the international ramifications of this issue. The government has reassured the court that it is working on the issue through a diplomatic process. Prime Minister Modi met Aung San Suu Kyi just last week on the sidelines of the ASEAN summit in New Delhi, and the two are believed to have discussed the Rohingya issue then. Neha Punia, New Delhi.
US President Donald Trump says his country is experiencing a new American moment. His maiden State of the Union speech to Congress contained unifying language at times, but he was also booed by some Democrats during parts of the address that focused on immigration. The Parliament of Catalonia has indefinitely postponed electing its new president, while the only candidate remains in self-imposed exile in Belgium. The Spanish government says it will arrest Carles Puigdemont if he returns to Barcelona on charges of rebellion and sedition. From Brussels, Jack Parrock reports.
Carles Puigdemont, the former president of the Catalan Parliament, released a video on social media saying he's disappointed the vote to elect him president once more was suspended. He has the backing of the two main parties in Catalonia's newly elected house. Puigdemont remains in Belgium, where he came after Spain took direct rule of Catalonia because he declared the region independent following an illegal referendum.
A gang carrying more than a ton of bear paws and body parts of four Siberian tigers have been detained in the far east of Russia, according to a wildlife organization there. It's thought the group were trying to traffic the items across a frozen lake into China in time for the Chinese New Year. From Moscow, Lucy Taylor reports.
The director of the Amur Tiger Center in Vladivostok said it was like a script from a film. He said the gang was planning to drive too many buses and a jeep across a frozen lake to avoid border points between Russia and China. But customs officials intercepted them, and inside they found the region's biggest ever haul of wildlife parts. About 870 pieces of brown bear paw, the body parts of four endangered Siberian tigers, and a large amount of frog fat. The vehicles were also reportedly carrying weapons, ammunition, and amber. The centre is now helping to file a report into the value of the animals and the environmental cost of their killings. They believe the body parts were being taken to be sold as gifts for the Chinese New Year. I'm Lucy Taylor in Moscow.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks very much, Ollie. Welcome to Wednesday's programme, the 31st of January 2018. I'm Richie Allen. Hope you've had a good Wednesday. We've had everything here today. We've had a bit of snow. We've had hailstones, torrential rain. It's very wintry in the great city of Manchester. You can tweet the programme between now and the end of it. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. I look forward to hearing from you. I've got two terrific guests lined up for you this Wednesday. I think you'll be excited to meet them both. More about that in a minute.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, Barry Troer is an amazing man. You don't need me to tell you that. Former UK Navy weapons researcher, and he once debriefed Cold War spies as well. We're going to talk about 5G, or fifth generation cellular telecommunications, and how this is going to provide serious health complications, and it's going to roll out a new era of harm from ultra-high microwave frequency radiation. Barry joins me this hour. And in the second hour, Mark Froud joins the programme. Mark's an independent scholar, and he wrote a book a short time ago called The Lost Child, which studies the figure of the lost child in English speaking and European literature and culture. Mark's wife Liz sent me a blog posting by Mark about Stranger Things, which is a hugely successful Netflix program and a show that I'm a big fan of. Mark's blog post on Stranger Things is pinned to the top of our Facebook page. If you haven't read it, check it out. Mark will talk about that and more in the second hour. And I'm looking forward to that for one reason, really. You know, Hayden Hewitt, LiveLeak.com, of course, and Trigger Warning TV, he's been going on for many years now about the need for people to have their own space online, a space that can't be controlled by Facebook or Google or Twitter. And I made the point to Hayden, I said, well, if we're going to encourage people to do that, when bloggers put something out there that's exciting, that's interesting, and it's challenging, we should bring them on programs like this to encourage people to do that and not worry about silly things. I mean, the mainstream media worries about, you know, the reach of somebody. This woman you want to interview, what is her reach? To hell with that garbage. You know, it's got to be independent. It's got to be independent content. When somebody does something and writes something and it's profound and it's interesting, we should be all over that. And I'm grateful that Liz got in touch. Mark joins us in the second hour of the programme. How the hell are you? You well? By the way, this is a Donald Trump State of the Union address free zone. That's kind of a contradiction, isn't it? If it was a free zone, I wouldn't have mentioned it, but I'm not going to spend any time talking about that today. Thank you to those of you who sent me the story about Formula One, which is £1 billion a year sport, of course, motor racing. Who are the top racers now? Lewis Hamilton is one, isn't he? And there's a German guy driving for Ferrari. I don't know an awful lot about it. Sebastian Vettel, that might be his name. Well, it seems that Formula One are going to follow in the footsteps of the broadcasters who broadcast the darts. And they're going to drop the Formula One grid girls as well. I won't say too much on this because you're bored of me talking about it. And I have said a lot about it in recent days. All I can say is my stance will always be, how dare any man or woman say that something is demeaning to them? Some job taken by or pursued by another man or woman. In this case, the models working at the darts and at Formula One, they obviously get well paid for it. They seem to like it. How dare any man or woman in society say, I demand that you vacate those girls, those women, because I'm offended by it or I'm demeaned by it. It's dreadful. But Formula One are, like I said, they're following that precedent set by the darts. And despite so many people protesting against that, in fact, the chairman of the PDC, Barry Hearn, I kind of owe him an apology, really. Not that he's ever heard of me, of course, but I suggested the PDC were behind this. It's the broadcasters. Barry Hearn is completely, you know, he's gone out there today to say, look, it's not us, the sports organisers. It is, in fact, the broadcasters. We can't do anything about that. Anyway, more on that if it does develop. It's ridiculous and it's indicative of where things are going. Put a post on richieallen.co.uk today, and it was about a debate that was held in the Irish Seanad last night. Now, the Seanad is the Irish language for the Senate, which is kind of like the House of Lords. Senators are not elected by the people. They are sent to the Senate. There's a number of ways it happens. It's a bit like the Lords. And they can delay legislation. They can send legislation back to the Irish Parliament, which is called the Dáil. That's D-A Fada, I-L. The Fada would be character. And they can delay legislation, but they can't veto anything. Now, a lot of eyes were on the Seanad last night because Francis Black, who's a musician, a very well-known musician from a very well-known family of musicians in Ireland, she's an independent member of the Irish Senate. She had a big hit some years ago with a song written by Christy Hennessy, rest in peace. Genius lyricist and songwriter Christy Hennessy, sadly missed. A song called All the Lies That You Told Me. Don't ask me to sing it. All the lies that you told me. All the tears that I've cried. And it was a nice song. She's a member of the Senate now. She wanted to, or wants to, introduce legislation that would make it illegal for Irish men or women to import goods that have been produced in the occupied territories in Palestine, which is a good thing, right? So she got this debate. It was going to be debated last night in the Senate, and there would have been a vote at the end of the debate. The bill is called the Control of Economic Activity, brackets Occupied Territories Bill 2018, second stage. So a lot of eyes on this. I wrote an article today lamenting the fact that shortly before the debate took place, the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, had a hissy fit and summoned the Irish ambassador to come and see him and answer for this and talk about, you know, explain why the Irish were doing this. She, the Irish ambassador to Israel, then contacted Simon Coveney, and he's the Taoiseach. He's the Irish Minister for Foreign Affairs. Taoiseach means he's basically the deputy Taoiseach, and he's the Irish Minister for Foreign Affairs. He's met Netanyahu. And what happened was, following the debate, instead of having a vote on Francis Black's proposal, which I, of course, would support, you wouldn't be surprised by that, it was agreed that the bill would be put on ice until the summer. And I wasn't surprised by that, but it does make me sad. It does make me cheesed off. It does make me angry. The gamut of emotions, really, today, you know, the great men and women I talked about today who fought for Irish independence, which we never really achieved, but they achieved as much as they could before they died or were murdered. What must they think when they see how the Republic of Ireland is a satellite state of the EU, how its assets have been stripped bare to be sold off to vulture funds, and how when a criminal, murdering bastard like Benjamin Netanyahu decides that he's going to have a hissy fit about Irish political business, we suspend a vote based on that, and we don't tell him what we should tell him to do, which is to take a running jump, have the vote, and be damned. It's a dreadful state of affairs. I fell out of love with my country a long time ago. Not with the people who live there, whom I love dearly, but with the country itself because of what it's become. And it was indicated in large capital letters last night just what Ireland is. It's a lackey, bootlick state for the European Union and for the Zionist interest. So fair play to Francis Black for wanting to make it illegal for Irish businessmen and women to do business with any company producing goods in the occupied territories. I don't know if it will come back before the Senate in the summer and what will happen thereafter. I don't know, but it's pretty dreadful anyway. In my opinion, it's dreadful. It's indicative of what Ireland is. 12.5 minutes past the hour. Thanks for all the kind words, by the way, about the conversation that I had with Mark Bajerski last night. I don't often do that. Thanks for all the kind words. That's the kind of virtue signalling, isn't it? I'm going to talk about virtue signalling in a minute. We've got the charts. The charts are back. The charts are in. I've got the top 30 countdown for the biggest virtue signallers of the week. It's going to be good. It's standing by. We'll do that in a minute. But the reason I say thanks for the kind words about Mark Bajerski's appearance on the programme last night was there has been a pretty big interest in the proposal I made last night to do a show next week where I will be inviting you to come on and talk to me about your own experiences with the, I don't want to say the paranormal, but I shared a story last night from a listener called Stacey, who had a really, it was an incredible story really, about losing a picture, the only picture of herself and her mother. Stacey's a very senior lady, and there was only ever one picture of her and her mum. She lost it many years ago, never got over losing that, the only real keepsake she had, the only image of her mother. And a very old friend of hers, someone she hadn't seen for about 10 years, came to see her and said she had a very weird dream about a photograph of Stacey and possibly her mother. And it was in a book, it was in the pages of a book amongst many other books that had been in Stacey's attic for many, many years. Presumably she was looking at the picture one night, put it in a book, and then forgot all about it. And they found the picture. An amazing story. So I thought, right, contact, spirit, let's do something on that next week. So next Wednesday we're going to give over the whole programme to that, and I'm looking forward to that. This is your Richie Allen Show. live on richieallen.co.uk, triggerwarning.tv, and of course fabradiointernational.com. Choose channel 2. We also stream on TuneIn Radio, and the programme is archived at Podomatic, at Spotify, and at iTunes as well. Plenty of places where you can grab our programme. Oh, the virtue signalers, dear listener. The virtue signalers are out in force this week. It's a dreadful thing. Is there a dictionary definition yet of virtue signalers? There probably is. It's been some years since I've had a good look at the Oxford Concise Dictionary, but virtue signaler must be in there anyway. I suppose if I was to give a layman's definition of it, it is when somebody draws attention to their, to themselves, to their worthiness, to their virtues, to their virtuosity, painting themselves in a wonderful way, taking the opportunity to paint themselves to be worthwhile, to be important, and to be virtuous. We had a lot of fun with this just before Christmas with the top 30 countdown of virtue signalers. So I think we should do it again. And especially because this week, as I said, it's been absolutely rampant. Do you want to hear the top 30 countdown then? Here it is then. Your top four. Let's pretend we've run down the other 26 virtue signalers in this Top of the Pop special. Let's do it, and let's do it good. Right, coming in at number four, it's Kay Burley and Sky News. Sky News reminds us at least 1,500 times a day that they're saving the oceans from plastic with their Ocean Rescue campaign. They won't shut up about it. Burley was like a child who'd gotten a gold star for her homework today. And why? Well, because Prince Charles mentioned Sky News and gave them a good old pat on the back for their commitment to saving the planet. Kay Burley at number four.
What about his dad? Well, he's used a speech at the British Academy in central London, there he is, to push for a greater effort to reduce plastic use. The Prince said awareness of the issue has improved and cited the work done by Sky's Ocean Rescue campaign.
Sky's Ocean Rescue campaign over the last year has helped, I think, bring this issue into living rooms and classrooms around the world. And I know with great interest that Sky has taken its commitment further by adopting principles to reduce the plastic footprint and by establishing the Sky Ocean Ventures Fund to stimulate innovation. So perhaps this is a model for others to join or follow or even emulate, we hope.
Our Royal Correspondent Rhiannon Mills joining us now from central London. It's a subject that's very close to his heart, isn't it, Rhiannon?
Yeah, Kay Burley practically wetting her panties that Prince Charles patted Sky News on the back for their wonderful efforts to save our oceans. Last week's number one has dropped to number three, the hysterical little bollocks himself, the progressive prat that wants to ban everything and everyone that doesn't share his narrow view of the world. It is the Guardian's own Jones. Here he is speaking with Piers Morgan.
I led the protest against the Saudi state visit outside the embassy. Did you come to that protest?
He led the protest.
No. Why didn't you turn up? Because you're absolutely
because
right.
Because unlike you, Owen, I don't feel the need to congregate mass amounts of people to just shout and scream about everything I don't agree with.
It's a proud British protest. You just said that. Where were those protests? And now I've said I led a protest.
I led the protest.
And then you're saying you don't see the point of doing it. So no. Just quickly, Piers. No, this is absolutely critical.
Go on, Sam.
Our government at the moment, and this is something I've written about. I'd love you to...
I've shared
the articles I've written. I went to a refugee camp.
I read a lot of what you say.
Well, that's worrying for both of us. But in terms of... I went to a refugee camp in Djibouti, and I spoke to Yemeni civilians.
He's amazing.
Because of British bombs being dropped by the Saudi
dictatorship. Owen Jones.
Your argument is, I can't tidy my own room because the rest of the world is a mess.
No, it's not. It's
until
not.
We... No, no, just quickly. And your argument...
Well, at some stage, I have to be able to respond to
come on.
Which is this.
Pure, unadulterated hysteria. Owen Jones speaking with Piers Morgan. He's led protests. He's been to the refugee camps. A brand new entry at number two. It's Carrie Gracie. Remember Carrie? Carrie was the China editor for the BBC. She resigned over the gender pay row. She went to Parliament today to speak to the Culture and Sports Committee about what happened to her. Carrie saw the cameras and, well, she turned into Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep, this is Oscar-winning stuff from former BBC China editor Carrie Gracie. How can this not be Number one, have a listen.
Our business is truth. We can't operate without the truth. If we're not prepared to look at ourselves honestly, how can we be trusted to look at anything else in our reporting honestly? It just won't do. It can't be a starting place to not deal with the facts. The facts are the facts, and I've been taught for 30 years to go report the facts and the important facts, make a story, tell it like it is as best you can see. I mean, I've spent 4 years in China, for heaven's sake. I mean, we're talking about enormous censorship. There's so many injustices. And I've been proud to go out there and deal with the facts as I find them, to face down the censorship pressures and intimidation of a very significant and powerful regime.
Cary Gracie there turning into Aaron Brockovich in front of her eyes at the Culture and Sports Committee. Meryl Streep, amazing stuff. All this aggro could have been saved if she'd had the same agent as Vanessa Feltz. Ahem. And this week's number one, last week's number two, it's Emily Thornberry. She's had massive recent hits with songs like Don't Destroy the Royal Wedding by inviting Donald Trump and Let's Delete Hate Speech to Save Our Children. Well, she's reached the top spot this week with this beautiful, beautiful bit of virtue signalling today. She's sitting in for Jeremy Corbyn at PMQs, and she was never, ever going to waste the opportunity. It's Emily Thornberry.
Next Tuesday will be the centenary of women gaining the right to vote in Britain, followed later in 1918 by a second right to stand for Parliament. Now, I'm sure that the Minister will agree that we have a long way to go with regard to the second right. After all, I am the only Emily elected since 1918.
Yeah, and
he is one of 155 Davids.
Wow.
And the women behind me on these benches represent one quarter of all the women elected in the last 100 years, but it is still not good enough.
Get in there.
So does the minister think... will the minister tell us how we can best increase female representation in this House? Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to give the Minister a specific example to illustrate what I'm talking about. According to the government's own figures, the number of 16 and 17-year-olds receiving carers' allowance for looking after disabled relatives at home has risen by more than 50% over the past 4 years. So last year, over 2,000 16 and 17-year-olds gave up their youth, they often gave up their schooling, to care for relatives at home. How can it be fair?
My heart is breaking.
How can it be logical to expect for them to take on that responsibility because of failures of the state and then deny them a say on how that very state is run?
Ah, she's amazing, Emily Thornberry. 16 and 17-year-olds are having to care for their sick, older relatives. Don't give them money, don't give them help, give them the right to vote. That's Emily Thornberry at number one this week. That's your top 30 Top of the Pops Virtue Signalling Countdown. We'll be back next week with the next chart. That's mad. If you can't laugh, 23 minutes past the hour. I'm running over time, so I better take some music and music. We're not actually going to take any music. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, Barry Troer is going to join me live. Don't miss Barry Troer joining me. And coming up in the second hour, Mark Froud joins the programme. First time you'll have heard Mark on this show. Looking forward to that as well. In the meantime, keep the tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Looking forward to hearing from you this Wednesday.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
is a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Right, and you're very welcome back to the programme. I'm very much looking forward to speaking with our guest this evening, in this first hour. He was last with us on the programme back in the spring of last year. An amazing man, a former Royal Navy microwave weapons expert. And as I mentioned earlier, incredibly used to debrief captured spies during the Cold War. He's been a whistleblower on the hidden dangers of microwave weapons and everyday microwave technologies. He's spoken all over the world about these subjects, and we've been lucky enough to have him on the programme over the years as well. A number of you have been in touch with me in recent days and weeks to ask me to get him back on the programme to talk about the rollout of the 5G. Well, what is 5G? People have been saying, what is it? Well, it's the fifth generation cellular telecommunications is what it is. And many people believe that it's going to bring a whole new era of problems for human health with it as it comes in. In fact, some academics in the United States have been warning about it, but they're not being listened to. Let's welcome back to the programme the terrific Dr. Barry Troer. Barry, welcome back. Lovely to have you back on. How are you?
Yeah, it's just Barry. Yeah, just Barry. It's just Barry for me.
Great to have you back on, Barry. The last time we had you on was back in May of last year. I know a lot's been going on since then. And I must remind our listeners, it's very interesting because when we speak to people like you, people, they often wonder, what about Barry and where can I email him? Can I get in touch with him? And I tell them, Barry, that Barry is the genuine article. You can't email him because he doesn't use a computer and he doesn't have a mobile phone for obvious reasons, right?
No. I have a fountain pen and a bottle of ink. That's it.
Fantastic. Proper old school. Proper old school. Welcome back to the programme. We see a lot in the news lately about 5G. In fact, the UK independent broadsheet, well, it's not a broadsheet newspaper anymore, sadly, is running a story this week about the President of the United States, Donald Trump, who wants to build his own internet and mobile phone network using 5G, making it super fast, and which might allow him kind of stave off the Chinese and the Russians and anybody else spying on his phone calls. This technology, Barry, I'm guessing that the public at large really don't know very much about it. They've had 3G smartphones, they've had 4G smartphones. We know that 5G is on the way. What is your understanding of what it's going to do, what it's going to be, and why we should be paying attention to it?
Well, it's not just the general public who don't really understand it. The scientists who have produced it have absolutely no idea of the mathematics of the waveform that it's going to produce or that it is producing. We know that it is in the, generally it's in the gigahertz range. Now I'll explain that. But what it's the problems are is that first there are, like its predecessors, there are no safety checks at all carried out on 5G. There are no safety tests at all carried out on anything to do with 5G. It is known that the gigahertz range, in other words, the waveform, the waves that come out, it is known that they are in the same frequency as some of our cellular processes in our body, some of our cells. It is known they can interfere with the cellular processes of the body. There are several different waveforms for 5G. It isn't just one wave. Already, I do know that 40 leading groups, or 40 leading groups of scientists in 40 countries, leading scientists in 40 countries have warned that the waveforms from 5G can be particularly harmful, not just to humans, but to all living species. And I can tell you as a military man that one of the top waveforms for 5G is incredibly close. And in terms of electronic waveforms, there really isn't much difference from the new microwave weapon called Active Denial that is now in use for crowd control to subdue and bring down crowds. And that is known or reputed to cause visual disturbances, certainly neurological disturbances, heart disturbances, all sorts of things. Now, that is the new Active Denial, which can be also released from aircraft or beamed from aircraft, that is incredibly close to one of the frequencies on 5G. And as I said, the waveform is so mathematically complex that nobody can really tell you how it's going to react, other than it makes a damn good weapon. And we are now producing this and handing it to toddlers.
You and I spoke many years ago on television in London. And you spoke, I didn't know anything about any of this at the time. My old pal, David Icke and others had said to me, and had been writing about it and the dangers of it, but I'd never had anybody like you on the programme. And you said to me, or I'll never forget it, you said, Richie, as it stands, you said, low-level wireless radio frequency, that's low-level wireless radio frequency. This is back now 6-7 years ago. When we're exposed to that, it can disrupt cell metabolism. It can reduce melatonin, which, of course, controls your sleeping and your waking cycles.
And your immune system, yeah.
And you said it'll disrupt brain glucose metabolism and it'll mess around with the blood-brain barrier. That was low-level wireless radio frequency. And you were proven to be right. So this is something different entirely, Barry, for the lay person. What's it like? Is it like turning 4G up to, you know, from 7 up to 1,000 on the dial on the radio? What is it?
I suppose the simple answer, of course, is yes and no. Each particular frequency can affect different parts of the body. You have, in an adult body, you have around 4,500 biological structures. And every part of your body, every single part of your body is in communication with every other part. Every single cell in your body produces its own electric and magnetic field. And they all, it's like a constant chatter that goes on in your body all the time. But they all have their own different resonant, cyclotronic, and circadian frequencies. Now, when I was talking to spies and studying this during the Cold War, it was realized that different frequencies could cause different things to happen in the body. There's a frequency that can cause the bowel to collapse, the eyes to go funny, the heart to collapse, and so on. And there are 4,500 different structures in the body that can be known to be affected. So as you run through the 2G, 3G, 4G, then you can affect different ones. When I was talking to spies and my list, the list that I made, I suppose I had a list, an active list of networks then that used between 40 and 60 different frequencies that could cause up to around 100 neurological and physiological conditions. The latest list that I have, I've seen one of 600. The latest list I've seen or heard of is now 750 different frequencies that can cause neurological, physiological harm. But it isn't 750 where you get this one or this one or this one. Mathematically, it is 750 factorial, which means you can get the effects of one multiplied by two, multiplied by three, up to 750. Now, 5G is going to encompass a lot of what all of the other Gs have and introduce its own as well. And this is why the top scientists in 40 countries have actually signed a petition saying, you know, you cannot do this. But like all of the other Gs, the industry and the government scientists are choosing to ignore the entire scientific body throughout the world and just plod on regardless, because they are actually above the law. You know, they can buy the law. The industry, I had a symposium here not too many months ago with, there were 11 professors and research doctors here for 4 days discussing all of this and turning it into a DVD. And they were just absolutely horrified that nobody is being listened to. And the producer of this, he said, well, I've researched this industry and it is now estimated at $17 trillion.
$17 trillion.
$17 trillion. And when you have that much money, you know, you can buy governments, you can buy countries, and it's not difficult to buy scientists. It really isn't. That will do an experiment which is legitimate but not accurate, and it will cause confusion. And this is what they're doing, and they're going to get away with it because they are above the law.
Can I ask you this, Barry? Let me ask you this. Again, going back to when we first began talking, we talked about the effects of radiation on the smallest creatures in the world. Well, not the smallest creatures, but, you know, the smallest creatures that we come into contact with every day. Birds, of course, and bees and insects.
Yeah.
Are we going to see, you know, because we talked about how back in the early 2000s we saw incidences of birds falling out of the sky, birds abandoning their nests, all sorts of issues that we saw back then. Are these issues, are we going to see more of this in the next 2 to 3 to 4 years?
Yes. It's going to get worse. In my paper, which I wrote 3 years ago now, Wi-Fi thalidomide in the making, I predicted for the human race that, and David Icke picked this up and published it, I proved using government figures, World Health Organization figures, secret figures, I proved that in just 3 generations, 60 years of human life, only of the exposed populations, only 1 in 8 children after 3 generations could be born healthy. Now, that has been, people picked that up and ran with experiments, which I'm very pleased of. And oddly enough, I read just a few days ago that experiments show that entire species of animals, entire species, can be extinct in five generations. Now, that would match my prediction, because if you've got only one in eight, roughly after three, you then don't have enough population of anything to sustain a workable population. So it's been published. I read it just a few days ago that they are now showing that after five generations for some animals, they could become extinct, except, and this is interesting, except bacteria and viruses. They seem to proliferate and grow and become more deadly in microwaves.
So while it's destroying, while it's destroying the biological makeup of creatures, of mammals, of you know, marsupials, of human beings, it actually increases the potency of viruses and some bacteria. That's extraordinary.
Oh, yeah, and it was because this came up in our conversation,
yeah.
And I can tell you, he wouldn't mind me, he's published it. It was Professor Moskala, who is the senior professor of Vienna University. I mentioned this, and he said, oh, yes, and he came out with the proteins on the bacterium and that. But it's known, and it is published, that bacterium, when they're exposed to microwaves, they can reproduce so rapidly that they have a defensive mechanism. Well, of course, they are the oldest living beings on the planet. They've developed a defensive mechanism, and they reproduce more rapidly, and they become immune to antibiotics. They sort of turn into sort of a super bacterium.
There's a couple of quotes I want to just read out here from learned men and women. This is Olga Sheehan. She's a former employee of the World Health Organization, and she wrote a book called No Safe Place. You might be aware of Olga, Barry. Olga says, Olga says, the plans to beam highly penetrative 5G millimeter-wave radiation at us from space must surely be one of the greatest follies ever conceived of by mankind. There will be nowhere safe to live. And as well as not hearing Barry Troer on BBC television or radio, we don't hear people like Olga Sheehan. That's, you know, everybody in the world should hear that, whether they want to dismiss it out of hand or whether they want to investigate it. The greatest follies ever conceived of by mankind, there will be nowhere safe to live, Barry. Is this an extinction event, Barry, that's coming for us?
To be honest, I don't study ecosystems and biological systems, but if you, I don't consider myself knowledgeable enough with respect to answer that question.
Fair enough.
I don't know what's behind the people who are doggedly ignoring most of the world's leading scientists, ignoring all of the cancer statistics, the birth statistics, the animal statistics. They are ignoring everything, whether it is just to increase their 17 trillion to 20 trillion and then sort of leave things and do a runner and hide somewhere, or it is an extinction program. I have no idea.
You don't know. And out of respect for you, by the way, my friend, I've known you a long time. Out of respect for you, I wasn't asking you that, because I wouldn't do that, because it's not right.
Yeah.
And I know you're going to give the proper answer anyway. Forgetting about what or what isn't behind it or why, just the bare bones of what we know, we have to consider that it could be extinction. But then there are other learned men and women who are saying that we're being transformed by other means anyway, human beings, through immunization, through vaccination, through geoengineering, and that maybe some sort of hybrid human being of the future would be able to withstand some of this stuff. But I know this is only stuff we can speculate on. But if we leave that to one side, go ahead, Barry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, not quite, because you with these microwaves, and it is known, there are 20, 30,000 research papers. With microwaves, we do know that every living thing on the planet, except bacterium and virus, every living thing, trees, everything, plants, every single thing, birds, fish, everything is affected by microwaves. Now, with us, when they're beaming these down from satellites, you have nowhere to go.
Nowhere.
You have absolutely nowhere to go. But you do have a choice at the moment not to be vaccinated. You have a choice not to eat certain foods. There is a little choice that you can have. It may be living away from the general population, which some people would quite like, but you have a choice not to do those. There is no choice with microwaves.
You've nowhere to go. I want to read another quote. By the way, Barry Troer is live on the line from his home this evening. It's great to have Barry back. It's been ages. Barry's done, he's had an amazing career as a former UK Navy weapons researcher. He's an expert in directed energy weapons. And of course, at one time, Barry debriefed Cold War spies, an extraordinary man. And he's been talking about these issues for many, many years. Let me just throw another quote at you there. By the way, I do accept your point, by the way, that at the moment you can exempt yourself from vaccines and that sort of stuff. You're absolutely right, Barry. But we've interviewed young men and women on this programme who've been put under enormous pressure by local health authorities to vaccinate their children under threat of, if you don't go along with it, you know, you'll get reported to social services. That's all of that's coming down the line, but you're right, and I'll agree with that. Let me just read another quote, by the way, just to back up what Barry has been saying. Professor Trevor Marshall directs the Autoimmunity Research Foundation in California. He's somebody, he's an establishment man, and this is what he says. He says, the new 5G wireless technology involves millimeter waves producing photons of much greater energy than even 4G and Wi-Fi. Allowing this technology to be used without proving its safety is reckless in the extreme, as the millimeter waves are known to have a profound effect on all parts of the human body. There you are again, Barry, to endorse what you're saying. Establishment scientists and PhDs are saying this is deadly and we shouldn't be doing
it. It is. There's not a single part of your body that will not be affected.
The question begs to be asked then. You talked a few moments ago about meeting academic men and women, and I know this to be true. We've read them online. This is common, Barry. They're just going to do this. But they are doing it. It's out there. And it's going to have a profound effect on the ecosystem. It's going to have a profound effect on us. What, and I know you don't have the answer to this, but I've got to throw it out there. What can Joe Bloggs do about this? Josephine Bloggs, what can we do?
This has been discussed with leading scientists around the world. and the general consensus with leading scientists is that this is genocide. Forward and simple. I do know five professors that have already brought charges of genocide against the government scientists who are pushing this out, along with industry cooperation. What I would like to see, and I don't think I will, I would like to see a Nuremberg-style trial, because around every single transmitter, and to my knowledge, there are over 200 epidemiological studies around ordinary straightforward transmitters where you have eight different types of cancers suddenly spring up and people die in their hundreds. We have all of the cell phone brain tumors. Many have been taken to court now. But the industry seems immune. The industry seems immune from all of this and is just pushing ahead regardless of petitions, international petitions from, I know in one of my papers, I think I cited over 200,000 of the world's top medical consultants, scientists, something like 200,000, who were all, I listed them, who were all really worried about this. And, you know, it's absolutely, totally ignored. They will do absolutely nothing. And their attitude is, we have the money. All you have to do is take us to court. It's as simple as that. But court cases with these can take years, and you need to be very, very rich.
You do indeed, don't you, Barry? Not only that, but you need to have a lot of faith in the justice system, don't you? That you're going to get a judge, or you're going to get a panel of people whom are impartial. And this is a problem as well. Loads of questions and tweets on this. Limiting your exposure to it. I've been reading articles today, including your own work, Barry, looking back over your own terrific body of work over the years. And I understand that maybe, I don't know how expensive these things are, but people have said to me, get an EMF meter, obtain readings and identify hotspots. And if you can avoid those hotspots, you know, all the best, or even mitigate exposure, you know, eliminate the source if you can. Try and stop the smart meter being introduced to your home, although, you know, the smart meters are being rolled out. Do you recommend that, an EMF meter, and try to limit your exposure? Is that a possible way of offsetting the effects of it?
The EMF meters that are out at the moment wouldn't pick up 5G anyway.
Wow.
They certainly don't pick up the pulse frequencies. They have quite a narrow range. So the only meter I know that will pick up just about everything that's coming around is a full range electromagnetic spectrometer, and they are around £5,000 to buy.
Wow, Jesus.
You really need an electronics degree to read all the dials and work them.
So good luck.
I mean,
with
you
that.
Can hire people that will come and do this, and you can shield, but it can be very expensive. But the other thing that I've noticed around the world, and I've zigzagged all over the world, is that the main transmitter, apart from 5G, the main transmitters tend to be put up in poor areas. With no disrespect to poor people, they tend to be put up in very heavily dense populated poor areas, because they know poor people cannot take them to court. 5G are different. 5G are taking a different approach here. They're having a very short range from their transmitter, and they're going to put it, well, they are putting it, on every single lamppost, every street sign. It's you're never going to be more than, in some cases, sort of 30 yards from a transmitter. So they are going to be everywhere. Lots and lots of low-powered ones, but of course collectively they will build up to what you would get from a big transmitter, but there are going to be millions upon millions of them everywhere, inside your house, inside things you buy, inside your phones, inside computers, on lampposts, on street signs, probably on trees if the council own them, just about everywhere.
Couple of questions, Barry, before we run out of time. The control of thought. This is a thing you and I have talked about over the years. The person operating this, or persons, if they want, they can plant suggestions in people. They can plant subliminal. They can give them ideas. They can make them think certain things and maybe even do certain things. There's no doubt about this, right?
Even better than that. What it's called audio hallucination. They can do that, and it's an amazing. I mean, I've actually seen it in working. It's an amazing thing. They can beam the pulsed microwaves towards your head or your body, and you will hear actual voices and sounds as if somebody was standing right beside you and talking to you, and you'll look round and you'll see nobody here. But they can do any voices. And the dangerous thing, this is used in brainwashing, the dangerous thing is that they can pretend to be an angel or a god or a demon, and they can convince you, as I have read, they can convince you that if they are a holy spirit, that you need to do this to destroy evil. And they can get you to do things that you wouldn't ordinarily do. It's quite a sophisticated form of brainwashing, but it's called audio hallucination, and it is so popular, it's actually been picked up by big department stores, and they beam people coming in to say, you know, you would like this meal and not that meal, which is more expensive, or you want to buy this because your wife will be pleased, or, you know, they're actually targeting people. And that's been taken to court and proven.
So you'll be watching the 6 o'clock news sometimes, and we'll get a story about a mass shooting event somewhere. And you can't discount the possibility that the shooter who's killed lots of people or blown themselves up might be as much of a victim as the people they've killed, because this could have been, you know, part of the whole thing. Oh. It could have been used on them, right?
Yeah, it's so easy, and I say this with no disrespect to you, sir. It is so easy, but I could probably start to turn you to do things you wouldn't ordinarily do in 30 hours.
A day and a half.
If I had you in my control in a building that I wanted, and I wouldn't physically harm you, there would be no fingernail pulling, nothing like that. There'd be no bruising, no bleeding. If I had you in a building, I could probably start to turn you, even maybe turn you within 30 hours. Given a couple of weeks, there would be absolutely no problem whatsoever using this method.
Free will is gone in a day and a half.
Oh, yeah, yeah. 30 hours. The average person cannot take this more than 30 hours. Military people who know what's coming and know how to avoid it and have been trained, they know how not to get caught if they can put up with it. But the average person can be turned in 30 hours.
Barry, just one final question.
That is from the spy schools.
30 hours, a day and a half, amazing. We less than a day and a half, in fact. We've had quite a lot of tweets on this. In fact, we've had dozens and dozens and dozens of them. There's a bit of a discussion going on the Twitter page. Listeners are talking about microwave ovens. You and I, again, going back some years, we talked about microwave ovens. Should people get rid of their microwave ovens, Barry, or is it a case of it's too late to do that now? What do you say to that?
There are two or three different answers to this. It's always been recommended, even by people who make microwave ovens, that you should never cook baby food or children's food in microwave ovens. The reason being is that food is made from living things, be they plant or animals, and the living tissue still has the protein structures that can be affected by microwaves. And if you affect the protein structures, they can become what are known as prions or rogue proteins, and they could start to affect the body when they go in. When you digest them, it may be 20-30 year process. Nobody really knows. But if you change the protein structures of what you are eating, that could have a knock-on effect in the body. This is why they say never do baby food or children's food. Now, if you're my age and you want to do a quick potato or something, there shouldn't be any difference in me. The other problem with microwave ovens, and you take your risks and you take your chances with them if you have one, the other problem is that I've yet to come across a single person other than me where somebody has said, would you come along with a detector and see if it is leaking? Because once you've banged the door with a plate or slammed it or knocked it, all you want is the tiny little leak in the glass or the seal around the door, and you have a very powerful microwave beam coming out. And they're usually eye level, and people tend to stare in them to see what's happening. And microwaves are renowned for causing cataracts and blindness in the eyes, because the eyes are really full of water or moisture, and microwaves react with water and moisture. So if you're staring into the things and they're leaking, then you are in trouble. So if you do have a microwave, check it. And an easy way to check it is to, if you have a cell phone, put your cell phone in the oven and then just get somebody to ring the number. If the microwaves go into your cell phone and it rings, you know that it's got a leak.
How interesting that, you know, because I haven't personally used one for donkey's years, but I'm fascinated by what you said there about the cell phone. Barry, I want to thank you for coming on. I've tweeted a link to your brilliant paper, Wi-Fi, a thalidomide in the making. I've tweeted a link there. We always have that on standby, so people can see it.
Well, yeah, that is proof, and it's not my figures. It is absolute proof from the leading scientist of the World Health Organization that of all of the exposed females, around 47% of them can expect miscarriages or a genetically damaged child. But you need to remember, please, that girls younger than the women who were experimented on here during the Cold War, children absorb 60%, up to 60% more microwaves than adults, because their bodies are more moist and their electrical conductivity is greater. So children can expect 60% more danger from microwaves than adults. And one of the first symptoms for a child is suicidal tendencies.
That's a siren call for anybody with young children listening to the programme. Read the report. I've tweeted it out there. It'll be on our Facebook page a bit later on. Barry, you're an absolute star. Thanks for coming on to talk about that again. Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Can you have me on again to answer all of the rest of the questions from the ladies and gentlemen when it's convenient?
100%. I'll tell you what, Barry, as soon as you want to do that, if you want to do that in a week or so, we'll give over an entire programme. And we'll get there, because we've had hundreds, literally hundreds, tonight. Yeah. So I'll give you a call in the next day or so. We'll arrange an event.
Give me a call in a day or two, and we'll fix up a day, and we'll just handle everybody's questions. I don't want the questions in advance. I don't need to know them in advance, but just get a list of the hardest questions and the most interesting ones, and you just blast me with questions.
That's brilliant, Barry. Absolutely right, okay. We'll do that. Thanks for doing it. I appreciate it, and we'll be in touch real soon.
I consider it an honour to be on your programme.
You're a gent.
So give us a ring, and then we'll arrange something in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Barry. Thanks for coming on
again. My pleasure, sir.
Great to have you on. What a wonderful man. Barry Troer, an extraordinary man. My friend and colleague, Jean-Ann Crowley in Cleggan, in the west of Ireland, said to me, and it's kind of profound, "He should be a household name," says Jean-Ann. Well, he should be. But, you know, in this country, in the short term, it's not likely that he will be. Along with Olga Sheehan and Professor Trevor Marshall and others trying to sound the alarm about this. Barry Troer on The Richie Allen Show for Wednesday, January 31st, 2018. Going to take a very quick break. When we come back, there's an enormous amount of tweets. I won't get through them. Go on Twitter. Where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, press enter, and you'll see the conversation going on there about what Barry had to say to me this evening. And I'll arrange him to come back on if not next week, definitely the following Monday or Tuesday, and we'll do a full show. And if people want to phone in and ask him a question, we'll try and logistically do that. It's better if we do that through Skype, but Barry, of course, is not on Skype, wouldn't have anything to do with it. Back in a minute with more on Wednesday's show. Back in a minute.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today. Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Welcome back. It's 7 minutes past the hour. Wednesday's programme, the end of January already. Time flies. It's only 327 shopping days and all of that madness. Yeah, time certainly flies. Massive amount of tweets on this. This is an area of great concern to you. I know that. I'm well aware of it. And that's why I invited Barry back on the programme. By the way, Professor Ole Johansson, who was an old friend of mine, whom I began speaking with when I was on the radio in Spain some years ago, of the Karolinska Institute, he's had some difficulties with continuing the great work that he's doing. I'm hoping to get Ole Johansson on this programme in the very near future as well. But I will organise Barry to come back and do the Q&A, because there were so many comments came in there. It's just absolutely madness, really. But yeah, and Barry, of course, is not online. This is the great thing, you know. People, he's not online. Well, of course not. He practices that which he preaches. He won't be online. He won't have Wi-Fi devices in his house. He just doesn't do it. As he said earlier on, he's got the fountain pen and the ink and the telephone, and that's about the size of it. Right, I'm going to take some music. When I come back, I'm going to be chatting with Mark Froud. I'm very excited about this. Mark is an academic and an author, and he's writing a blog these days, which is hugely interesting. To find the blog, you need only go to lostchildmarkfroud.blogspot.co.uk. Froud is spelled F-R-O-U-D. lostchildmarkfroud.blogspot.co.uk. Very interesting man. And he's been writing about the television show Stranger Things. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Mark about that and his article. We'll talk about the Montauk Project, Manchurian Candidates, and more besides. And why so many of these programmes these days are dealing with these issues. And we'll talk about, through history, through our culture, the symbolism around lost children as well. Extraordinary. So Stranger Things is set in the early 1980s, 83 to be exact. Exactly, I should have found a bit of music from 1983, but then again, that would make me a professional, and I'm not. This is from 1986. This is Bon Jovi and a song called Wanted, Dead or Alive on the Richie Allen Show. Any questions or any comments you want to make while Mark is on with me, tweet them as usual to at Richie Allen Show. The time is 9.5 minutes past the hour. Wednesday's programme, your Richie Allen Show. Richie Sambora with the licks, John Bon Jovi, Wanted, Dead or Alive, 1987, 1986, I don't know, you can argue the toss. 12 minutes past the hour, welcome back. Coming in on the end of the first hour, the Barry Troer interview will of course be on podcast, with everything else at the conclusion of the programme, and all the other outlets you can hear it as well, iTunes, Spotify.com, Podomatic, and all the rest of it. Now, Hayden Hewitt has been banging on for years about the need for people to have their own blogs, their own space on the internet, so that people who want to find them can find them, so that they're not buried under an avalanche of shadow banning by Facebook and Twitter. So what's that all about, really? Well, it means that to get something out to people, to speak to people, don't post it to Facebook, have a blog. And we were talking about, you know, the proof then, not so much the proof, but it's then put up to content creators like us when people do that and when they've got something interesting or exciting to say and they should be featured. And I was dropped a message the other day by a lady called Liz Froud. Liz is a listener to the programme, and she sent me a link to an article by her husband Mark. It's a brilliant article. I shared it on Twitter and on Facebook. It's about Stranger Things, the television series, but it's about a lot more than that. Stranger Things have happened, Hollywood abuse and what we have lost. The link is to lostchildmarkfrow.blogspot.co.uk. And Mark's a very interesting man indeed. He's the author of a book called The Lost Child in Literature and Culture, which was published last year. And it's of great interest to us, considering the things we talk about on this programme. As I said, he's an academic. The book is about the lost child in English speaking and European literature and culture. And it argues that the lost child figure is of profound importance for our society. It's a symptom as well as a cause of deep trauma. I'm looking forward to reading that book, but I'm delighted to welcome to the programme the man himself, Mark Froude. Mark, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well, Richie. It's wonderful to be here.
Brilliant stuff. Terrific article.
Thank you.
So when you began watching this Stranger Things TV show, which we did last year, we, for our sins, subscribed to Netflix. It came on. He said, right, we'll give it a go. We thought it was outstanding. And because of interviewing people like Stuart Swerdlow and obviously David and others and talking about Montauk, and of course we've had Cathy O'Brien on, it began to speak to me. But as a narrative, it really spoke to you, that television show, right?
It did. I guess it brought a lot of things together. The fact that it started with a child who got lost, in this case to, you know, a completely different dimension. It was talking about disruptions of time, the way it was set in the 1980s, sort of flashback to when I was a child as well, sort of spoke to me a bit, the references to the films there. But I think as soon as I started watching it with Liz, and then they actually referenced MK Ultra as well, it started to resonate with lots of other things. And thinking about, I started to look into it and found out about the Montauk project and stories about that. And while I'm not sure if it's true or not, but just the fact that we know it's been admitted to that MK Ultra happened, maybe still happening, but it was admitted to anyway by Clinton. So if the government, always think if the government's going to admit to something, then there's a lot more besides that's hidden. That's
you might get get 5% of it, right? If the government is admitting
right,
it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I want to ask you, Mark? And we've got loads of time, by the way. We've got as much time as we need for the rest of this hour. Fascinating that reading about you in the last couple of days already, I'm going to order your book and I'm going to read it. But you've got me very interested in a book that seems to have had a big impact on you when you went to uni. And it's a book that I never read, but I've always been aware of its existence, but I never read it. A book by a man called Ian McEwan called The Child in Time, which I understand, Mark, is a fictional story, but it deals with elements of obviously losing a child, not losing a child to death, but losing a child as in a child going missing, but also elements of time travel. Give us the Cliff Note version of what that book is about and why it meant so much to you.
I think it struck a chord because it encapsulated so much, and all around this absent child. It's a story of someone whose child was abducted in a supermarket some years before, and there's obviously symbolism with that because it was written in the 1980s, and it's obviously a critique of the Thatcher government of the time, but it's set in the near future, sort of a bit advanced from when it was written. And it refers to a prime minister in the book anyway. It refers to a prime minister, but it doesn't actually specify the gender. So it's having a little bit of a dig there at Margaret Thatcher, possibly. But it was the way that the lost child figure seemed to be at the centre of a book that was criticising what was happening politically and socially at that time. But then it also had lots of other references to quantum physics. And that was something that I hadn't really read into much before I read that book. And I guess I'd always been someone who was always looking at literature and the arts, and science to me just seemed, in the sort of William Blake way of viewing it, as being a way of constricting reality or quantifying it, putting it into numbers. I think that was a bit of a philistine view on my part. But when I started to hear about quantum physics and looking at that, and it links quantum physics with spirituality in the book, and that really interested me because quantum physics seemed to be saying a lot of similar things in a hard science or hard mathematics sort of a way that spiritual religions had said for centuries, you know, like Buddhism and Hinduism. And also within that, there was lots of talk about time and how time was flexible, was not linear, how we perceived it, normal clock time, day to day. And there's a particular strong central scene in the book where the main character, Stephen, who's lost his daughter years ago, Stephen is going to meet his estranged wife, and he has a sort of, well, he sees a pub, which he doesn't remember ever going to before, but it seems strangely familiar, and he looks in the window and he can see a young woman who he sort of knows is his mother as a young woman. And she looks at him and he has a sort of passes out and then wakes up sort of with his estranged wife. And then he later talks to his mother and she tells him about a story when she was having a trip with her husband to be and stopped in this pub and they were talking about aborting the child. And then she said she saw an apparition of a baby in the window and knew it was going to be her son, so she didn't abort the child. I don't know, it just, to me, it was quite striking in a very realistic novel, a very realistic writer that included a scene like that, and it just seemed to collapse everything into one book.
And it had a profound effect on you because you started to think about these things then, about whether time is relative, whether it's linear, which has obviously informed the article anyway. I mean, I've not read your book yet, but it's informed the article. And I want to talk, and I'm terrible for going off in tangents, so give me a smack and say...
I'm obviously like that myself.
No, it's brilliant. It's great speaking with you. So, by the way, when I say the article is brilliant, it's brilliant. You're a terrific writer. You know, thank God that you've started the blog. And this is the way forward. I mean, I'd never have heard of you if Liz, your wife, hadn't said, look, my husband is an academic, he's an author, well, he's written this article. It is brilliant, and it's dealing with really important themes about the nature of reality, where we are. I'm speaking with Mark Froud. Mark is an author, an academic, great guy. Great to have him on. This article about the relationship between Stranger Things and events that may or may not have happened. Obviously, I think they did. The Montauk Project, I've spoken to people about that, the kidnapping of children, experiments, remote viewing, you know, other dimensions, that sort of stuff. It's incredible. And this goes back to Mark reading a book when he was at uni in his first year, this Ian McEwan book, which I've already ordered. And I can't wait for it to arrive because I've not read it before. I really can't. Now, this is fascinating. You talk in your article about the lost child throughout history, throughout our culture. Why, and this is a ridiculous question to ask because I suppose we could be here all night, but why is, we almost have an obsession with the loss of children. Now, when I say we almost have an obsession, I was in Spain when Madeleine McCann went missing and I was beginning to get back into serious commercial radio there. And okay, the media stirred a lot of it up, but in general, you know, people were absolutely overcome by it. We saw the same when Jamie Bulger was murdered many years ago by Venables and the other guy. What is there something going on? Forget about who's kidnapping children for a minute and who's doing things to them. The effect it has on society, Mark, the trauma that it seems to have on cultures and society. You're fascinated by this, right?
I am. Obviously, I'm looking. Initially looking for it mainly from books, films, how it's represented there and when there's characters of lost children there. And so often it seems to be that the writers use a lost child figure to symbolise when society's broken down and when they were questioning what was happening in the society. I guess because a child is portrayed as being an innocent figure. So maybe it's something that we've lost within ourselves or society's lost. If children can be mistreated, abducted, killed, you know, it tells us something about the state we're in as a nation, as a society. But it's interesting, there's a flip side as well, because we are obsessed with it and it keeps coming up all the time in culture. And obviously those tragic cases that you mentioned, which have been throughout the media, you know, continually ever since they happened. But tragically, there's thousands, hundreds of thousands of children that go missing every year. And of course, 99% of those, they don't receive any coverage at all, hardly, if at all. And it's interesting that certain cases, and admittedly, you know, some, you know, horrific cases, I'm not saying they shouldn't get any attention, but it seems like the media chooses to highlight certain cases and make such a huge thing about them that they dominate the media, and they create an image that seems then to obscure so much else that goes on.
Right.
And all these hundreds of thousands of children that do go missing. And as you know, which I didn't really appreciate so much when I wrote the book, but, you know, having read or listened to more alternative media since, and talk, you know, and obviously talk about paedophile rings has become.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, Mark, I haven't, because some of my listeners might think Richie's lost the point here. I haven't lost the point. I'm fascinated by you exploring the metaphor of the lost child and how it's a metaphor for the breakdown of society. That's brilliant. It's cutting edge stuff, really, and it's above my head. But I'm fascinated by it, and I'm going to read more about it. How this, you know, through the centuries, we can see this, and your work on that. I can't wait to get into it. But at the same time, you know, as well as it being a metaphor used in cultural literature and all of that, it is going on at the same time. It's physically going on, and it going on has had. Or continues to have some sort of psychological effect on society at large. And I'm very interested in that as well. And I suppose that's where Stranger Things comes in, Mark. Have we lost Mark momentarily? We have. We have. It's gone quiet there. We'll give him a call back. This is fascinating stuff, this. Mark Froud was on the line momentarily. I think he's back now. Let's give him a call back there. He's an academic and an author. We lost you momentarily, Mark.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. It could be me. I was chatting away to myself there for a minute. I realised you were gone.
There or something.
That happens to me all the time. I'm talking away and I realise that people have left the room. Lovely. No, but I was making a point. I'm fascinated by the use of the lost child as a metaphor for bad times and for the ills of society throughout the ages, which is a very interesting area of research, and I can't wait to read your book. But at the same time, of course, lots and lots of children go missing. You made the point in the article. You know, you talked about, you know, some of the most notorious examples of the terrible mistreatment of children, you know, through, you know, Roma children, through the Catholic Church, the horrible story about Franco and all the babies. I mean, you could have talked about Ireland as well, Kolkata in India. And this is having some, obviously it's having some profound wider psychological effect on society. Is it fair to say that? Do you look into that? Is that something you're interested in?
I am interested, yeah. I mean, it is a communal trauma, I think. But maybe in the way of some, when they talk about people, individuals having trauma, and they repress the memories of something that happened to them, it seems in a lot of ways that that's what we do as a society, because, you know, a lot of those things that you mentioned were obviously suppressed, you know, even though so many people knew that they went on in the different places where it was happening. You know, it went on for decades, and something like child migration, where thousands of children went from homes in Britain to the colonies, former colonies, and often terribly mistreated. And it just wasn't spoken about, and people didn't know about it until the Child Migrant Trust under Margaret Humphrey started to sort of investigate it. And I remember seeing the film about it, Oranges and Sunshine, by, I think, Jim Loach, Ken Loach's son. And, you know, when someone first approached her about it, she said, well, this, it can't be a thing. You know, obviously the government wouldn't have allowed this to happen, or it would have come out by now that this terrible thing was happening, and the government was allowing all these kids to be shipped over the other side of the world, and you know, and just forgotten about, really. But it wasn't, you know. And it's I don't know, it seems to be like we've buried, I'm sorry to use terrible sort of metaphorical language when we're talking about real tragic occurrences, but we buried this lost child sort of underneath the foundations that we built our society on, and that's why it just shows what a shallow or what a terrible structure that's built around us, because underneath it is this lost child which we're denying, whether it's something in ourself that we've repressed or we've. I think a lot when I talk about time, the figure of the lost child strikes a chord, because a child is supposed to be a promise of the future and, you know, hold so much hope. And at the same time, it maybe reminds us of when we were children and what we were like then, or what we were, you know, our past. And so it's some sort of disruption. And when a child goes missing, a child that obviously should, you know, grow for many years to come, it somehow disrupts the idea we have of time, about a linear time of just a child being born and growing up and living its life. It just it just seems that it just shows that we, you know, the child migration thing, the very origins I mentioned in my article, was back in the 17th century when kids used to be rounded up off the streets, and they used to call it spiriting, a sort of press gang thing.
Tell us more about that, Mark. Stay with this for a minute, because you talk about this in the article. Talk to us about spiriting. Let me just remind the listeners there, it's 8:30 the hour, time is bloody well flying, as it does whenever I'm fascinated by my guests, and I'm generally fascinated by all of our guests. I'm not being a politician here, I'm not. But tonight I'm absolutely riveted, because I've read Mark's article several times and I've been reading about him on online. I can't wait to read this this book that Mark published last year. Talk to us about spiriting, because our listeners, many of them won't have heard the term. What happened? Tell us about this.
Well, it goes back to the, as I say, I think 1618, the first sort of kids were rounded up, and it was actually by the City of London, which rather again sort of strikes a chord with what David Ice talks about how the City of London is at the centre of so much. But it went on. The Aberdeen in Scotland was a big centre of it, and I think Bristol as well was a port where a lot, I suppose you'd call it trafficked, were trafficked from in modern language, but a lot of the kids from poor families, and that's something that resonates throughout all these stories up to the modern day. It's up to when you're talking about forced adoptions. Maybe now it seems to be the children from families that are considered sort of poor or undesirable some way seem to be the ones, some sort of social cleansing thing. I think you mentioned that term before. But back in the 17th century, yeah, these kids were just sort of rounded up by ruffians, I guess, and carted off on ships to America. Then that was the principal colony, to work as slaves almost. I think a lot of them were called indentured, so they had maybe a period of so many years when they had to work basically as a sort of slave for one of the farmers, plantation owners on the colony.
The Virginia Company, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then after a certain period of time, I think some of them were, you know, they were freed, or they were allowed to then own their own property. But obviously they'd been ripped away from their families, you know.
With the collusion of the City of London at the time, Mark.
That's right, yeah, which is very striking. And then, and certainly it was big business. There was a famous guy, Peter Williamson, I think it was called Indian Peter, he got known as, and he actually... again, he may have embellished his own story a bit, but no doubt he was... abducted from around Aberdeen in I think the 17th or early 18th century, and he was taken off to the colonies. He ended up that he was freed, and then he fought in wars, and but he actually came back, and he actually managed to make it all the way back up to Aberdeen, and he actually sued the merchants of the town that had been colluding in sending these kids abroad. So right from that early, those early days, you've got children being adopted as being central to corporations, if you like, to big business. It was, and to the building blocks of the empire. They were, you know, in the more recent child migration in the 20th century, some people, you know, refer to these poor kids as more sort of material for the forge, you know, more to build the empire, because they wanted to populate the colonies with white children, but they were taking them from poor families. And in a more modern form, it was from a lot of religious institutions, maybe some of them, you know, probably maybe well-meaning in a way at the time. But at the same time, it was this misguided idea that, yeah, I mean, because a lot of these children had, you know, their parents were still alive. They've maybe just were poor, couldn't cope with their kids. So they'd gone in basically orphanages. But then the kids were taken away, and they were often told that their parents had died when they hadn't. Letters were letters that the children tried to write, or that the parents wrote to them, you know, they never found the other person. You know, absolute terrible tragedies that, you know, holes were ripped out of people. And
so I have a question. I have a question on this then. This is just extraordinary. So if this is going on throughout history, and it has done, and it's gone on under the direction of those who are sworn to protect and uphold the law, it must imprint on our consciousness, and it must be passed on. It must be, right?
So, I think so, yeah.
This is where you're going with this. So here we are in 2018, and this is going on. I mean, I was riveted when you were talking about Jim Loach's film and it going on under the noses of people. I could testify to that in the Republic of Ireland, with obviously what was going on, the church, Christian Brothers, the nuns, all of that, domestic abuse of children, which I have experience with. This is going on, and through the generations, this is imprinted on our what we are, our consciousness, if we are this conscious vibrational beings, and it is doing something to us. And time not being linear is related to this in some way as well.
I think so. I mean, the lost child. Hello?
I'm with you. I'm listening to you, Mark.
Oh, okay. I'm just got a little tune. I think the lost child figure, certainly in the books, the plays, the films that I talked about in my book, the lost child figure, it disrupts something about how we see the world, and also our perception of time. And I think where it comes back to Stranger Things, maybe this idea of other dimensions and what is reality. I think the lost child figure questions that as well. I mean, just on a material level, it questions how, you know, we let the politicians do what they do, or we let the structures of society control us. But I think there is something a bit more profound. Also, apart from just lost children, I write about where a lot of writers have talked about mute children that don't speak, or that or feral children that are outside language, because you know that's the real, I suppose, almost one of the most basic ways of we structure our society is through language. I heard Max Egan actually talking on his broadcast recently, saying about writing, about being spelling literally, and it's this way of writing out thing. It's like the law. It's a sort of a basic way of controlling and setting out the structures of society. So I think, again, in a lot of the works that I've looked at, there's a silent child, which is sort of a silent witness, and it's outside language. And it connects to something spiritual, this, what you were talking about with, was it Mark?
Mark Bierski. Yeah.
And connects, I mean, it's such a tragic thing, but I think there's sort of, it could connect hopefully to to the fact that there is this spiritual consciousness that lies beyond and sort of underneath everything. And if there is it, as Mark was talking about, if there's any way out of where we are, this sort of trap, although the lost child is such a tragedy, if there's any way of healing it, it's maybe just trying to connect to that spiritual, whatever it is, beyond our material reality.
Let me just do a quick recap, Mark. Mark's book is The Lost Child in Literature and Culture. If you look that up online, you'll find it. But the blog that Mark writes can be read at lostchildmarkfroud.blogspot.co.uk. Mark's an academic and an author. Wrote a terrific article. I mean, it's one of the best articles I've read in a long time, after watching with his wife Liz Stranger Things, which many people have seen by now. It's just finished its second season. Remarkable story. And we've covered a lot in the time that we've been speaking, and Mark's been talking about the lost child through history and through our cultures. And this is extremely fascinating. It really is. And how it's been used as a metaphor to describe, I suppose, the basest, not so much instincts, but the worst of society, when society's been broken, when things have been very bad. We've gotten into talking about how this has had a profound effect on the consciousness, our collective consciousness, over generations, and what it might have done or be doing to us, the way we think and the way we understand the world. It's terrific stuff, Mark. And I'm thinking, somewhere along the line then, you've got to throw into the mix, if there was an elevation in consciousness that could deal with the damage that is done psychologically and physically to children, what might that mean for us in terms of liberating us in the way we think and in the way things are, even, and the way we might be able to change things? Or am I going too far there?
Well, no, I mean, I guess I'm an optimist at heart. So I think, again, it's maybe this idea of there being a lost child within all of us. So if somehow we can connect back to that, to make ourselves whole, so each individual whole, and then the indivisible whole as one consciousness. I mean, it's that's obviously, I guess, what we all want. But well, I say we all want, but yeah, I think that's there's something missing inside us. And I sort of finished my book by saying it may seem trite, but the lost child, any lost child, for whatever reason, whether the child's run away or if the child's been abducted, is to do with an absence of love. Whether it's caused someone to do something terrible to a child, or it's caused the child to run away because they feel unloved. If I guess that is something our whole world has, is an absence of love. So the only way to heal it and heal ourselves is going back again to what Mark Byerski said yesterday, is really just trying to love and heal with each other and the community, really.
There's so many pressures on that, of course, today. I agree with this. I like where this is going. We don't have children. I know I've been saying this for a long time on the programme, but we've lived a crazy life, and we'd like to have children as old as we're getting now. But I know that the relationships that people have with their children in 2017, 2018 is nothing compared to the relationship 30, 40 years ago. People are finding it terribly difficult to have the proper relationship with their children because life gets in the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, I'm not, I'm a proud stepdad now to Caleb and Connor, but haven't children myself. But there are obviously all these creative pressures. I mean, I read recently a sociologist, I think he is, Chris Jenks, and he was talking about, well, he wrote back in the 1990s, the book I was reading, but he was already talking about structures from the age of the child, you know, schools and other pressures that are starting at the young age to start that control on people.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how guilt is somehow internalized. And so this sort of idea of as 24-hour surveillance, you know, we've internalized it. And that's in the 1990s, just as the internet and all the rest of it was just sort of starting off. And now it's a million times worse now, because you've got kids on social media and everyone's sort of, they're judging themselves on the basis of these images of how people are sort of shown as they should look and that sort of thing. So there's all these other pressures apart from anything external, in terms of like built structures like a school or that sort of thing. So it's, you're right. It's just, it's terrible. It's I'm starting to think more and more from things that I've heard, listened to your program and people we've talked to about that, you know, so much of it seems to be constructed deliberately to restrict us. And while these terrible cases of children being abducted is maybe in some way the extreme of it, it's sort of a thing for every child, every person, that they've got this constriction in them that is stopping them realizing their true, that this love, this connection to the spiritual, and it's being taken further away.
And I'm listening to this with you know, mouth on the floor. I mean, the time is just flying by, and I'm thinking more and more that I have to believe that there's been, through the generations, an agenda to do this, to disrupt this by, you know, through the sexual abuse of children, the disappearing of children. I have to consider that, I can't discount it. In fact, I'd be a liar if I didn't just admit that I believe that's, you know, the way it is and the way it has been. And you talked in your article about people like Rich Terrell and others who are questioning the solidity of the world and the reality of the world and whether or not it's a simulation. And it's just mind-blowing stuff, really, to be considering and to be connecting those subjects, you know, the abuse of children, the forgetting of children as well, as you've discussed, and how that might all be related, you know. Do you ever think, Mark, that it's just a minefield, you know, that how do you even begin to sit down with somebody and talk about that? Or in your case, how do you even begin to write about that? Where the hell do you start? You know, so much of it is theory. And yet deep down, you really suspect that it's not theory. You know, you kind of have a feeling that it's not theory. Do we know the answers? Do we have the answers, do you think, inside us? Do we know the truth? Mark Bierski said this last night. He said, we know the answers. We've forgotten them, or they've been drilled out of us, or, you know, we've been tampered with in a way that we don't remember stuff. Do we inherently know the truth, do you think?
I guess I would like to think so. I guess I'm someone that's always come from things in terms of reading about them in books rather than having an intense, intimate connection with them, like some people that have a real spiritual connection to them. So I guess I haven't quite felt that really to a great extent, but I do think that everyone is capable of it. And I think that all our reality is just a manifestation of this nothingness, if you like, which is this spiritual plane, maybe. So yes, I think, you know, the answer to that, I think it is, I guess, it is within us, because we're all from this same manifesting from the same plane. So it must all be within us. So I would.
Whatever the origin is, yeah. Whatever the origin is, we've obviously made up. We obviously have made up, and will make up, and do make up some part of it. So therefore, that information must be there. This is, it's mind blowing stuff, you know. The idea that our perception of reality could be manipulated through, the lost child, the trauma of children. I know that what you've been talking about is not just about that. I know it's only one aspect of it. I don't want you to think that I've missed the point. I've not. People always do that, though, don't they, Mark? They pick out bits of information that make sense to them, but I try not to do that. You know, I am really fascinated by the cultural telling of that story of the lost child and how it has been used as a metaphor. I'm absolutely fascinated by your interest in Stranger Things and Montauk and all these other things as well. It's incredible. It sounds to me like in the last few years, profound changes have happened to you, you know, in terms of how you see things. And I mean, you did the academic thing. You're obviously an excellent writer. Mm-hmm. you have to work for a living like everybody else. I know you do that as well. But somewhere along the line, things have changed for you. I'm right in saying that, right?
Well, yes. I've got to thank Liz for sort of turning me onto all the, you know, different alternative media and what's known as conspiracy theories, you know. But it's good to get different perspectives. I always, I guess, had an interest in things without going too deeply into why it was, but I had interest, you know, from a kid in sort of space and ancient civilizations, and always felt that there was a more spiritual side to being, to life than just the here and now and the sort of the material world that we see around us. So I always thought that was the case, and I always certainly didn't like or trust what was done by people in charge. So I suppose it wasn't a huge step from that to then hearing about things that weren't in the mainstream, and to me it just sort of opened up a huge amount of extra information and research, which seemed to connect into what I'd already written about academically, really, through literature and the arts. And it was just sort of taking it to a different level and a different perspective on it, really. So I think that's a good way to be, because it's things can be closed off, whether it's at universities or you know, that sort of thing. I have to be wary in writing academically about things that I couldn't prove materially, but I guess that's why I like writing about literature and the arts, because you can talk about the imagination, you can talk about the spiritual in terms of what those creative authors have done. But, you know, I'd like to sort of get my own creative word out there as well. I've got a sort of novel in the pipeline, which I might sort of self-publish to avoid sort of trying to bang my head against the brick wall with the sort of publishing world. I think the power of the imagination is a great thing, really. But it's good. Definitely, you need to try and look outside the barriers that are put around you and try and see a wider perspective. And you know, I certainly think you know, people should pay serious attention to the many sort of researchers, the people you've had on your show, because obviously they are, you know, many of them have been working for decades on their particular fields. And I remember seeing an interview on the BBC ages ago when David Icke was sort of stitched up a little bit and Michael Portillo was there, and he just sort of closed it all off saying conspiracy theorists are lazy or something like that, you know, which...
That's right. But David turned the tables on him pretty quickly, didn't he? David said, "Have you read the book?" And Portillo said, "No." And he said, "Well, how would you know then?" Typical arrogance of the system and the establishment. I mean, what a lousy bastard. What a stupid thing to say. Oh, it's but, lazy, you know, it's lazy journalism,
You know, the laziness is obviously not looking outside of what you're fed by the mainstream media. You know, that's the lazy position, if you like, you know. So, you know, to look further and to look into other perspectives, you know, can take a lot of work, you know. But and obviously it's a difficult position to be in for a lot of those people, because they're ridiculed. But I think, yeah, everyone's just got to find their own. You said about picking little bits of things out, but I think that's what we all do in life. You know, we all write our own stories, and that's why literature, books can reveal things about real life, or, you know, what we consider to be real life, because that's what we base our life on. We base our life on stories, whether it's just telling someone down the road, you know, what we did yesterday and who was
talking to.
You know, it's all about stories and language, you know, is how we construct the world. So, through that, I think we can maybe get an insight into something a bit deeper, maybe. But I think I always try and bring my work back, like with the blog, to things that have happened to real people, to real cases, because I think you've got to get a balance of the two. Look to the...
Well, you do. Look, you do. There's a friend of mine, Daniel, who was talking earlier on about the depopulation agenda. And when I was speaking with Barry Troer, Daniel was saying the point that's being missed here is the deep, you know, depopulation agenda. And I said to him, look, nobody's missing that point. Go and tell your next door neighbour that the rollout of 5G is to kill her and all her family. You know, they're not going to listen to you. You can't do that. You've got to meet people halfway when you're asking them to consider things that they might think are far out. You know, I've learned to do that, not to be dogmatic and to say, well, look, have a think about this. Or did you hear what this guy said? Or did you hear what this woman said? And you know, the point about taking bits out that make sense to you. You can do that with people. You know, I'll know somebody who might think that Jim Mars and David Icke and the rest are all crazy. But I know that there are elements of your excellent article that will mean something to them. And I can show it to them and say, well, have a look at that. And you open the door by doing that, you know. Mark, we're just about out of time. I can't believe it. It's absolutely flown by. I want to mention again, Mark wrote The Lost Child in Literature and Culture. I can't swear by it because I haven't read it, but I've ordered it and I am going to read it. And I'll be letting you know in due course. But do go to lostchildmarkfroud.blogspot.co.uk. I've tweeted a link to it already. Read that brilliant article. It's indexed. There are references there and links to his sources. It's typical. It's great journalism. It really is. And this is the way forward, you know. Get away from Facebook. If you've got the ability to write like that and you've got something to say, do what Mark did and share that with people. A big shout out to your wife, Liz, for getting in touch, Mark. Sincere thanks for coming on, mate. That article meant a lot to me. And I look forward to reading you in the future and speaking to you again in the near future on the programme. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Richie, and for getting the article out there. I really appreciate it. It's fantastic.
It was an honour, mate. Thanks for that. Great stuff. Mark Froud there, and Liz, who I'm sure was listening or would have been listening to that, for sending me the article. Brilliant stuff. Check it out. I've tweeted it, and it's been on Facebook, shared with other people. Marvellous, marvellous stuff. That's just about it for the programme. I'm right out of time this Wednesday. Thanks to Barry Trower for coming on in the first hour. Remarkable man. Love Barry and what Barry does. We'll get him back on again within about 10 or 12 days. We'll have that phone in with questions for Barry. And you've just been listening to Mark Froud, an author and academic, talking about the lost child through history, through our culture, how it's been used in literature and our culture as a metaphor for bad times and the worst of times. But he also talked about and expanded into areas where how it has impacted and affected our psyche, our consciousness, the terrible things that have been done to children, how it's impacted our understanding of time and how we understand reality. He's somebody worth keeping an eye on, I think, Mark Froud. We'll certainly do that. Thanks to Simon Stewart for looking after the YouTube channel. Thanks to my mate, the thespian, Jean-Ann Crowley, who sent me a lovely stanza from W.B. Yeats, a stanza of a poem that was about the spiriting of children. I don't have time to read it, but it's brilliant. Thanks to Jean-Ann for that. Going to leave you with the Lighthouse Family and a song called Lifted. And that closes out Wednesday's programme. Check out richieallen.co.uk for interesting articles. Thanks for listening. Look after yourselves and one another. I'll speak with you again tomorrow, Thursday at 7, without fail. Until then, it's bye from me. Bye now. Speak soon. Bye. Doesn't really matter about
indubitable, the peace we found in a bright blue space up above the clouds.